I'm J.G. Michael, and this is Parallax Views.
Parallax is you observe an object, you see a change, but that change is not really a change in the object, but just a change in how you relate to the object in your perspective of the object.
Welcome to the testing room of the Parallax Corporation's Division of Human Engineering.
Now please cross the chair. And you will sit down. Make yourself comfortable. And be sure to place each one of your hands on the box on either side of the chair. Making sure that each one of your fingers is on one of the white rectangles. Just sit back. Nothing is required of you except to observe the materials that are presented to you. Be sure to keep your fingers on the box at all times. Alright? Hope you find the test a pleasant experience.
On this edition of Parallax Views, I'll be speaking with Disinfo's Thad McCracken. Founded in 1996 by Richard Metzger, Disinfo is one of the longest-running counterculture websites on the internet. Continuing where Richard Metzger, Matt Staggs, and others have left off, Thad McCracken has taken up the mantle of Disinfo as its editor-in-chief, taking the great counterculture website into the 21st century and beyond. Now I gotta tell you, if you've listened to prior interviews that Thad has done on other podcasts, you know this is gonna be a wild, trippy conversation as we cover a wide array of topics, including counterculture and the alt-right's infiltration of counterculture, shamanism, sorcery, chaos magic, astral projection, Terrence McKenna, and psychedelics. Hell, we even go and talk a little bit about UFOs and alien abductions. Like I said, it's always a trippy, wild time with Thad McCracken. Before we get to the interview, I'd like to make a few minor corrections. I made a few mistakes in the interview. The first was when I bring up the Know Nothing movement during the portion of our discussion dealing with Alex Jones and the resurgence of populist nativism in the United States. I state that the Know Nothing movement was popular in the 20th century, but actually the Know Nothing movement goes back to the 1850s. I don't know why I misspoke on that. It's a really interesting topic. And I suggest all my listeners look into it. The past often informs the present. The second correction I'd like to make is when I state that Alex Jones is being funded by Sinclair Broadcasting. Now, the truth is that Alex Jones has been cut from the Sinclair affiliate KLBJ in Austin, Texas, due to his Sandy Hook conspiracy theories, or at least that's why I assume he's been cut. But as Alex Jones' ex-wife, Kelly Jones, has pointed out, Sinclair Broadcasting did give him his first bit of social capital that gave him a bit of a mainstream success, shall we say. So I think people should consider Alex Jones and his connection to Sinclair Broadcasting despite that relationship having evaporated because of Alex's over-the-top antics. The third and final correction I'd like to make is when we speak about the alleged alien abductee, Whitley Strieber. I erroneously referred to Whitley as Whitley Strieber. I don't know why I did that. I've been familiar with Whitley Strieber's story for some time. the story that he tells in Communion, his best-selling work of his alleged alien encounter. I apologize to Whitley Strieber if he just so happens to listen to this podcast. My bad. With all that being said, I hope you enjoy my interview with Thad McCracken. To get you ready for this discussion, got a track by his band Black Science entitled Exegesis.
Psychic argonauts before the source is unveiled. Righteous, this unholy spectacle has never felt so unreal.
Of my mind, without me. are not Satanists who make pacts with the devil.
They are spiritual explorers
in the deep caverns of the mind.
Carrying with them
the lamp of wisdom
and armed
with the power of God.
Welcome to Parallax Views, Thad McCracken.
It's good to be here, JG. Sunday afternoon, I've got two dogs on my lap right now, and I'm ready to talk some weird shit for sure.
So you work with Disinfo, which has been around for a long time. What's the story on Disinfo? What's its like history and its mission statement?
Man, you know, that's a really weird question that I can only answer part of, but you're absolutely right. It is the longest running countercultural website on the internet. It's wild where I was saying that it probably is. I'm just going to say that it is because I'm not aware of any other. It started in 1996. So at this point, I mean, and these are kind of the early days of the internet and that 90s kind of counterculture that came out. So it's been around for, you know, 22 years at this point. I think we're going to do some kind of 23-year celebration. And I started writing for it in the end of 2012, early 2013. And I've been a fan for years, too. And Disinfo used to be a fairly prominent publishing company, and they put out DVDs. But unfortunately, with the DVD and the publishing market, digital technology sort of, you know, that wasn't an easy thing to keep up with. So, and here's the funny thing. I'm telling you this. This is my interpretation of what happened. I've never officially worked for them at all. I wrote stuff for them, and I used to make money selling books through them back when they were a lot bigger. I'm in the dark because I'm piecing together what happened. What I can tell you is that, as far as I could tell, they sold off the publishing division and the book publishing division, and the DVD division and the book publishing division. And then the guy who ran it wanted to retire, essentially. So he let a website called Above Top Secret take it over. And I don't know if anybody knows Above Top Secret that's listening. I wasn't really familiar with them, but I'd been writing for them for like 3 years when this happened, and my writing was kind of getting more and more popular, and the site was getting, I didn't even realize till I took it over, like 1.5 million hits a month still. And so Above Top Secret took it over, and man, they ran it into the absolute ground. And I sort of would have known that. Like, if you go look at AboveTopSecret.com, like conspiracy theory stuff, that's what they do, but it's gone so much more right wing. Like, I've looked over there and seen just a bunch of like Fox News reblogs, and like, it's like a horribly graphic design site. It's like one of the worst websites in the internet. So somehow the guy who had basically owned Disinfo, and still owns the title actually, for years, did not understand that it was a terrible idea to put these people in charge of the website. And I knew that, you know, like I looked at it like instantly. I heard about them taking it over, and I looked at it, I was like, oh man, this isn't good. Sure enough, they lost like half the readership in like a month. And then over the period of a year and a half, they lost like 4/5 of the readership of the site, just because they were so, the guy who was running it didn't even know what it was. You know, like I said, it's this kind of like internet countercultural institution that's been around for like 20 years at that point. And the guy didn't even know what it was. Like, he was just put in charge of it and was just like, oh, I'm going to turn it into this completely different thing. So it didn't work. It failed miserably. And then they just left it to die. So they were just like, okay, now that we've like ran it into the ground, now we're just going to like stop updating it. So because of that, and my writing was tied to this site, and most of the people that are familiar with me are familiar because of disinfo.com, I just reached out. I pitched my book to the guy who runs the website, and of course they didn't pick it up, which is hilarious. And what I didn't realize at the time, though, is they'd actually sold the book division to somebody else. I mean, he actually sort of tried to tell me that, but I didn't understand like what he was telling me. It's like, I'm not really in charge of the book division anymore, and I think it's since gone out of business. So anyways. So I ended up just emailing him to be like, dude, what the fuck? Like, how are these people still in charge of the site? What's even going on? And he sort of like offered to let me run it if I wanted to, which wasn't something I wanted to do. I had never in my life thought, oh yeah, I want to I want to run a website. You know, that's not really what I want to do. I'm more of a writer and a musician, and I've got even made films, and I want to do some more of that. So like running a website and, you know, like doing commentary on news and politics and stuff is not something I wanted to do at all. And yet it was just this weird thing, the way, you know, like I said, it's just, it's become sort of an institution on the internet, especially because there's so few sites that do kind of countercultural, psychedelic, esoteric content, that it just seemed a shame that it would die. And of course, also, like, this was right after the 2016 election, like 5 months after that. So things were so weird, and there was part of me that, because Disinfo delved into conspiracy theories so much for so many years, and I was sort of oblivious to the fact that half of my fan base was really into that stuff, which I find, you know, a lot of it to be really ridiculous. It's become, unfortunately, really sort of dangerous with the Alex Jones. So there was part of me that's another reason I don't really officially work for Disinfo. I don't get paid. Like, they just put me in charge of the site. So I've been running the site for slightly over a year now. We've gotten ratings back up a bit, you know, but not even close to what it was before. But, you know, and so, yeah, it's like this thing sort of just fell into my lap. It's not really something that I ever intended to do, but I'm just keeping it alive for God only knows how long in the near future, until I don't know, I guess until I feel like we've accomplished what we do. But unfortunately for me, I sort of realize that there, as much as I don't want to believe that there are information wars, there are. So when somebody hands you a minor, you know, media publication company, you know, it's like, hey, do you want to run this thing? You know, it's just like, well, you know, it seems like the least I could do, given the insanely fucked up times that we're living in right now. And thanks for contributing, by the way. You've been putting podcasts up over there. So absolutely, thanks for that.
Yeah, and we'll get into conspiracy culture stuff in a bit here. I do want to talk about that. But first, let's talk about counterculture, because,
yeah,
you know, people forget with Disinfo, there's so much that was like really making a revival in the 90s, you know.
Yeah.
People were rediscovering Timothy Leary, Robert Anton Wilson, Terrence McKenna. Could you talk about those guys and like the influence they've had on you?
Yeah, absolutely. And you're absolutely right. Disinfo really did. And, you know, and this is where, when I tell about that, I don't know the entire story of Disinfo. I would love, at some point. I think it's such, like I said, it became kind of the largest, it's now the longest running countercultural website on the internet, and probably still one of the biggest, weirdly enough. Like, I think it's smaller, but then sometimes I look at these other sites' number and I'm like, well, we're still sort of actually bigger than a lot of these other kind of countercultural websites. And you're right. It came out of the 90s and Richard Metzger, and you're right, with kind of the X-Files and Twin Peaks, there was this interest in UFOs and how that kind of ties together with psychedelic culture. And in all honesty, I think Disinfo was really kind of founded on like Robert Anton Wilson was doing with kind of his Operation Mindfuck shit, which was, and what's so funny about that is the premise of Operation Mindfuck was that you spread all of these ridiculous conspiracy theories, and the idea being that you would actually wake people up to, if the conspiracy theories were ridiculous enough, that it would, you know, serve as almost like a totem effect in a lucid dream, not a totem, but a trigger to let people understand that the realm that they're existing in is a dream, and that they could then, you know, sort of snap out of it, and then they'd suddenly realize how stupid these conspiracy theories were. Now, what I've come to realize is that is, when I look at Wilson's work, who I do respect, but I'm a pretty harsh critic of in a way, it's like, there's just a problem of optimism, of like sheer idiotic optimism in this idea that people are so smart that they're going to be able to tell what, you know, oh, this fake news is so ridiculous that, oh, obviously that's fake. And now I'm being woken up to this kind of spiritual position, right? And so you're right. That's part of the reason I've taken control of Disinfo, is because, man, there was a time where this utterly straight up fake Illuminati conspiracy theory about this place in Oregon called the Temple of Oculus Anubis was like one of the most popular things on the website for like an entire year. And it was just straight bullshit, right? And I was writing for the site and seeing this kind of thing happen, you know, but I wasn't running the site or anything. And yeah, now, I mean, we all know what's gone wrong there, right? Like, I don't have to fill in the rest. That this idea, obviously, that kind of Robert Anton Wilson was tapping into with his Operation Mindfuck was painfully naive. And Wilson himself was more of what he considered an optimist rather than a realist. And it's nice to think that you know, like, what they thought they were doing, in my mind, was trying to, like, wake people up from a materialist trance by making reality so surreal. And what I think they were doing was unintentionally spreading right-wing propaganda, you know, like, and the idea that they actually thought that, like, spreading shitty right-wing propaganda, it was actually going to wake people up. It's like, no, that does way more harm than it ever, you know, like, for every one person that's gotten woke up, gets woken up by the ridiculousness of that, there's probably like three. I mean, like I said, I think we see how absurd that's gotten, and that, no, most people aren't going to wake up from that. But you're asshole, right? And the other thing that we're looking at with the counterculture of the 90s, which disinfo sprang up from, is, you know, there was also this belief coming from McKenna and Leary that technology was going to be this great spiritual uplifter, right? And, you know, there was this kind of incredibly naive, you know, belief that computers were going to save us all, and now we're also forced to face with the kind of brutal reality that, you know, computers were really a lot to, they had done amazing things, but they're also just kind of steroids for capitalism. And they are, in fact, absolutely the prime factor in making wealth inequality as bad as it is right now. And also a prime factor in destroying the environment. Like, so again, there was just that naivety of both the 60s and the 90s counterculture that I guess to an extent, I'm trying to do what I can to write that path. Yeah. And yeah, you brought up McKenna too. I'm a huge McKenna fan, actually, out of all the kind of 60s countercultural figures. I think his cultural criticism was pretty much, I think he fell short of being a shaman by a long stretch of the imagination, but I think most of his critique of society was pretty much on point. And I gotta be honest, like, with Michael Pollan and the kind of, you know, mainstream of psychedelic culture that's going on, they're sort of trying to take that out of the original counterculture and say, you know, oh, you know, psychedelics can be used like, you know, essentially SSRIs or psychoactive meds.
Microdosing.
Exactly. Which I do, by the way. I microdose and it works. Like, I've been microdosing. So you're right. And it's the same thing with meditation. It's just like this idea that they can help you fit into the culture and that's the value. And I'm like, no, but I think, like, McKenna and Leary, when they were saying that culture was full of shit, and Bill Hicks and Robert Anton Wilson, like, no, so yeah, in a way, I think disinfo, because of that, if we ignore the kind of Operation Mindfuck side, I think it's more pertinent than ever, because now that psychedelics are being mainstream, there needs to be the original voice. It's like, that's not the point, though. You know, the point is to question capitalism, not to fit into capitalism. The point is to maintain that there was always this kind of, you know, rebellious nature of taking psychedelics and having psychedelics make and alter states of consciousness, making you realize that capitalist society is full of shit and needs to change drastically. Not, oh, well, this helps make me be a better employee. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's weird seeing where the psychedelic culture has gone in the 21st mm-hmm. century, because you have so many, like, it's like become a haven for dude bros in a lot of ways. Like, you know,
yeah.
Not that I don't hate Joe Rogan or anything. But, like, yeah. I like Joe Rogan, but at the same time, it's like, he's kind of a dude bro, and he has these, like, right-wingers on now.
Yeah, and that's something that I just don't understand, and that's my position, too. Like, Joe Rogan, I'm basically indifferent to the guy. You know what's funny about that I've mentioned before? Matt Staggs, who is the talent buyer in the Joe Rogan show, is essentially the reason that I'm running Disinfo right now.
He
used to do the podcast, and he ran the site for, I think, 3 years, and he was the one that set me up with an account that, you know, I pitched him stuff, and he liked it, and he promoted my stuff for me. And so I always had this assumption that Joe Rogan was this cool guy, you know, and he has interesting guests like Graham Hancock, and, you know, and I like the Duncan Trussell podcast, you know, it's definitely, and I've gone and seen him, and for the most part, I've dug his stuff. So I always had this, like, impression that Joe Rogan was this cool guy, and then recently, like, since the election, like, there's just been all, yeah, he just has all these weird right wing, and I'm like, what the fuck, you know? And right before we started this, you were talking about Jordan B. Peterson, and I'm like, I shouldn't even have to be addressing this guy, but unfortunately, like, the bleed through between, like, especially, I'm sure, because of Matt Staggs, the bleed through, like, disinfo fans and Joe Rogan fans is pretty high. And so, like, I'm, and you're right, it's like, all of a sudden, like, these weird right wing authoritarian values are being slipped into supposed countercultural thought. And this is even outside of the supposed alt-right, you know, because the alt-right is trying to like be completely like everybody, you know, we're the heel, you're supposed to hate us. Whereas what they're now calling like the intellectual dark web is like, you know, and you're right, as far as I could tell, this is solely because of Joe Rogan. And I'm really just, I like, my opinion on Joe Rogan is like because of Matt Staggs and like we used to post this stuff on Disinfo. I checked that stuff out, you know, two or three times back in the day. I didn't really like it that much, so I didn't listen to that much. I checked out some of his comedy. I didn't think he was that funny, so it's just one of those things. But yet I've never disliked him either. I've just never been somebody that really thought the guy was that great.
Well, can I butt in for a second?
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting. I don't know if you saw it, but he interviewed that Dave Rubin guy, the former mm-hmm. Young Turks guy that is getting funded by like the Koch brothers now.
Yeah.
And he actually took Dave Rubin down the other day.
Like, well, good.
Dave Rubin was going on about like how we should have like no government interference, and he's like, "What do you mean, man? Like we need postal services, we need universal health care," and he just like made Dave Rubin look like a freaking idiot. So like, it's weird because Rogan can be here and there with stuff.
Yeah, and that's what people try to explain me. So like, I don't really have a judgment because I don't listen to these shows, and yet simultaneously, I can say that he has legitimized idiots like Jordan B. Peterson, and this is what's so fucked up about it. I mean, like, I actually I'm doing a post next week that's talking about this international fucking calling intellectual dark web, which is so now it's like the alt right for like young video game playing losers and the intellectual dark web for like racist college educated older people, right? Like that's you know, like if you're like if you're like got slightly libertarian tendencies and you're sort of racist and you have like a college education, now there's like the intellectual dark web, right? Like there's more like college professors. Yeah, I actually wrote an entire article, Paul Calling Bullshit. So yes, I do feel a need because like, man, I saw Aubrey Marcus like posting and he's like a trust fund kind of raw. And you know, but weirdly enough, like I don't want to like make fun of the guy because I've listened to him on podcasts and tell some really interesting ayahuasca stories that I found pretty fascinating actually, right? But he's also this like super good looking like trust fund bro, you know, and who sells natural supplements through Rogan. But he just had like Jordan B. Peterson on last week. And I'm like, Jordan B. Peterson, the week before that, made a video for PragerU. And I didn't know what PragerU is, but what is PragerU?
Conservative nutcases.
Yeah, it was something made by a conservative radio host, and it's funded by religious fracking billionaires. And the whole video is literally talking about how the countercultural icons from the 60s were dangerous nihilists who are trying to destroy society. And this is being promoted by a psychedelic guy. And then what gets crazier is like when you try and explain this to people, like I've talked to hosts, like I do a podcast because of Rogan, like they don't understand this. Like I've had people like argue with me, like what's so wrong? So what's so bad about Jordan P. Peterson? I'm like, he says there's no such thing as a gender wage gap, you know, and he says, and he gives like the most insane, explicit, crazy, like I've never even been able to make it through more than 15 minutes of an interview with that guy without being like, fuck this guy, right? And years before he got so popular, like I tried to listen to him and like after 15 minutes, I'm like, this guy's a fucking jackass. After like 5 minutes of like listening to him talk about lobsters, I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Like for me, it's like Nickelback. Like I just changed the channel. And yet because of this, like, I feel like I have to address this shit as running a counterculture rush. I was like, no, the people that made psychedelic, but I've been arrested for psychedelic drugs, by the way. I was thrown in jail when I was younger. I was faced with the whole corruption firsthand. I almost committed suicide, you know, because of it. Weirdly enough, I've never really been that close to suicide in my life, but this experience of being arrested on felony charges and have to deal with all that bullshit pushed me really close when I was like 20 years old. And it's like, motherfuckers, these are the assholes that threw me in jail. You know, you fucking idiots. It's like, don't have these fucking dicks on your show. This guy just made a fucking propaganda film telling people that the psychedelic culture are a bunch of, and I'm quoting, dangerous nihilists out to destroy society. Like, because they, you know, and it's just like, because of the civil rights movement and the gay rights. I mean, like, what are you even fucking talking about, right? Like, and it just blows my mind that, like, I actually have to explain this. You know, it's like, you're kidding me. Like, what the fuck? Yeah. Yeah. Anyways. Yeah. Go ahead.
I was gonna say it's like that's kind of funny to me because you know I know that Richard Nixon once called Timothy Leary the most dangerous man in America. So I mean, yeah. I guess Jordan Peterson is down with like Law and Order, Richard Nixon, Mr. Watergate.
Exactly. This shit is so absurd. Like the counter and that's and you want to talk about like the alt-right too. Yeah, why am I running disinfo right now? And yeah, I mean, it doesn't turn a profit for me. It makes me very little money at this point. Not to say I'm going to try and get it to the point where I'm getting paid like at least minimum wage or something to run the fucking thing. But the reason I'm running it is because of this shit. I'm like, you know, when it, like, the idea that weird religious fundamentalism, you know, is somehow now counterculture, you know, the idea that we're gonna, since our, we were raised with parents that accepted things like the civil rights movement and the gay rights movement and, you know, the psychedelic movement, that the idea that rebelling against that is going back to their grandparents, you know, it's like, we're rebelling by going back another 50 years, you know, like, no, like, this religious fundamentalism is not fucking rebellion. So then you have some like Jordan B. Peterson that's literally making right-wing religious propaganda videos, and then he's simultaneously going on like Joe Rogan and Aubrey Marcus, and like I don't listen to the shows, but like I can see that my fans are buying into this shit. In fact, I had a really creepy Daniel Pinchbeck, of course, widely known as a psychedelic writer, wrote a piece about why Jordan B. Peterson is full of shit. And when he posted it on his Facebook page, and one of my other friends tagged me to be like, take a look at this. And, you know, it's a good article, and you can look up Daniel Pinchback, Jordan B. Peterson. I think it's a Medium article if you want to read it. He, of course, attacks him in a far more intellectual tone than I do, because I don't, you know, like at this point in my life, I've read a lot in my life, but I don't really pretend that I'm an intellectual. Like, that's not that's not what I do, you know. But he attacks him in that more, right? So, I, what's disturbing is, again, this is a psychedelic fucking writer, and when I'm looking at his page, there was like five times more people defending him than there were people like sticking up for Daniel and being like, yeah, I agree with you, Daniel. There was like five times more people being like, you just don't, and that's the classic thing, you just don't understand. You just, you know, you know, he can say he wants enforced monogamy and societal structures that get young dudes married at a young age in the New York Times, and people are just like, oh, you just don't understand this position. I'm like, what do I not understand about this right-wing propaganda video? He said that calls the 60s counterculture a bunch of dangerous nihilists out to destroy society. What did I miss there? You know, and so it's sad, man. And yeah, we're getting into some weird territory where do you remember how, I mean, like, I'm 40. I don't remember a time where like right wing shit was trying to be marketed as like rebellious or counterculture, you know, like I don't really remember that. So this is,
I mean, not at this level, but I mean, yeah. There's always been attempts by the far right to sort of infiltrate subcultures, you know, like the neo folk scene with bands like Death in June were sort of trying to like infiltrate the goth scene and whatnot, but never at this level. You know,
no, not at this level. And again, why? Like, because, you know, the opportunity to start running disinfo came in May of 2017, and it was seeing this alt-right shit, you know, that really was like, well, if there's anything I can do to counteract this and point out how utterly absurd. And again, I have to point out, though, you know, I mean, I really am, you know, more of a wizard or a sorcerer. And I want to be writing about spirituality and shit. I don't really want to be writing about politics. You know, that's not really my area of expertise at all. And the only reason, but, you know, it falls into my area of expertise when these values that are pulled from religious fundamentalism and the politics that are being passed are just so not in tune. You know, things like racism and homophobia. And obviously, and if you read my work and the stuff that I've channeled over the years, I am always talking about how the feminine energy needs to balance out the masculine energy. This has been a theme of my work going back to the first book I released in like 2011, I believe, you know, that's out of print now. And so, I mean, you can go back and read my work, and I've been saying this forever. And so now you see stuff like the Me Too movement, and it's just like, yeah, I mean, weirdly enough, I mean, I have precognitive abilities. I've been talking about this. And more to the point, I mean, if you talk to anybody that's really had gotten far enough out there into spirituality, there's this sense that all consciousness is connected, right? And we're all part of essentially the same story or the same narrative, in that there's a lot of good evidence, is, you know, like things like remote viewing and everybody has weird synchronous experiences that suggests that that consciousness is connected. And there's a great deal of scientific research suggesting that too, like going down to, again, things that people have pulled out in hypnosis. Some people have had brain injuries and suddenly known how to play the piano, suddenly known how to make weird art. So like, we know this is there, and so it's this connection. And so then when this gets involved with things like racism and sexism and homophobia, it's just like, no, like, no, it, you know, it feels like my job to be like, no, that's the wrong, this, I, you're connected, like, this hate, this authoritarianism, like, this division between saying you are different, you know, than your fellow being. It's like, no, the reality is that you are connected to that other person in ways. And I know that's a hard, harsh truth that most people don't want to acknowledge, but, you know, and it's also what I find funny about that the alt-right, you know, getting into, say, things like magic and witchcraft again. And it's just like, you know, I don't know how to tell you this, but that's going to blow up in your face, man. Like, you know, it's like this does not turn out well. You know, this idea that you're going to use this to be, you know, you're running from your own issues and your own issues are going to destroy you. You know, you don't hate these other people because of any rational reason. You hate it. You hate them because of something that's going on inside of you. And if you're going to try and embrace that hate, what's going to happen is that it's going to completely destroy you and backfire. And so weirdly enough, I find it honestly sort of hilarious that a lot of these right wingers are getting into this stuff, because I'm just sort of laughing like, yeah, go for it. You know, I'd be like, I'm the one pushing you in. Like, yeah, do it. You know, you try and use your magic against me. See where that gets you. You know, there's just fundamental. You don't even understand the fundamentals of this shit. You're going to get eaten alive. And so there's a weird sense of, you know, someone like me to say, you know what, like, don't. Like, you guys don't know what you're doing. Like, you are not the people that should be getting into this stuff. This is not going to go well for you at all. Anyways, yeah.
Well, it reminds me of that there's a Grant Morrison essay in one of the Disinfo books, and the essay is called Pop Magic, where he talks about, you know, if you really engage in, like, chaos magic and you take it seriously, you can summon the wrong kind of wrong kind of mojo and demons at times. If you're not careful.
No, absolutely. And it's just, you know, I come at this stuff from such a kind of psychedelic angle, and what I do is so much more in tune with it. It really is a shamanism class, you know, Western, a kind of a mesh between shamanism and Western esotericism. And, you know, I'm primarily more influenced by psychedelic drugs and that's like in weed meditation and things like that. And I've never been attracted to, like, that whole dark side of the, like, never. In fact, that's sort of what kept me away from the occult for years. And I was summoned into the occult via Acts of Protection, which, you know, people don't believe. And yet, weirdly enough, there is a decent amount of material evidence to suggest that. I mean, you got to suggest that it is pretty weird that a guy who has no attraction to, like, you know, Coil and Throbbing Gristle and Aleister Crowley, like, I've never liked that shit at all. And yet somehow I write books about channeling, you know, I channel books and I talk about, like, communicating with demons and astral projection and shit like that and summoning demons. And so how did that happen, that this guy who has no attraction to, like, a culture at all just wound up getting into this thing? And the answer is, I was summoned by weird entities into this kind of shit. And you're right, it's because of that dark side. I mean, it's just, and you know, I have to acknowledge that with a lot of it, it does come from, I think a lot of people that are really attracted to that, it does come from abuse from the church and trauma. And so I do have to be sensitive to, you know, that, you know, this is some people's way of dealing with the trauma that's been inflicted by them, by their family forcing them into religious institutions. And that's where that whole reactionary side of the occult, you know, and this is exactly how Christianity wanted to think about the occult, right? Is as this sort of evil, you know, because it attracts the wrong kind of people that way. But, you know, again, you do have to criticize it, because, like, I don't think that's an effective way to deal with your trauma, really. Like, I think you're doing the opposite of that. It's sort of like when you think, you know, like, for years, people in psychology thought that there was, like, these temper rooms and stuff, right? That, like, letting out your anger and literally, like, embracing it is, like, going to really provide you this extreme catharsis. And, you know, that's been proven to be completely wrong. Like, it actually ramps up your rage. And, like, the more you play that role of the angry person, the more that's going to sort of just get into you. And again, it's just like, now there's a lot of people, like, right wingers that think they're going to do magic to, like, you know, oppress other races and shit. And it's just like, well, yeah, you know, I feel sorry for you. I do. That's going to be a hard lesson you're going to learn. It really is. That's not going to work out very well for you. And I guess, you know, I feel a responsibility to, I don't know, help them guide those people to a softer landing. But, you know, anyways.
Yeah, I mean, I myself used to be, like, one of these like libertarian types when I was like really young in college, and I like dabbled with some of the alt-right stuff before it was really alt-right, like back when Richard Spencer was working with American conservatives. So I sort of feel the same way. I want to guide younger people away from that stuff because it's just bad. It's bad news. It ruins people.
It's bad. And just on a basic level, man, I mean, you could lose your job. You're potentially out of just like basic shit. You know, you could be completely ostracized at this point. Yeah. You show up at one of those rallies. I mean, your face might be on Facebook all over and it should be like, again, it's absurd to me that yes, I support the civil rights movement that happened way before I was born. Like that's become like a radical position, you know, and it has like, sometimes I just say basic stuff on Facebook and I'll get all these like racists attacking me. And it's like, how, you know, this is why we needed propaganda laws, you know, and why we had propaganda laws, you know, and why things like the Telecommunications Act were so damaging, and then the gutting of the FCC, and then of course the internet, which unfortunately really needed to be regulated and just isn't, you know, and it happened at a time where this technology developed so quickly and our government was so broken beyond a point that it could actually do what needed to happen to let this get out of control. And now that it is out of control, you know, it's like now, fuck, I mean, I guess we just have to deal with it the best we can. But yeah, no, you're right. This whole right-wing counterculture, it's like, you got to be fucking kidding me with this shit, right? And yet they're not kidding. Like, this is real. Like, and unfortunately, too, I feel like when we talk about dumb things like the alt-right, it props it up into way bigger. Because, like, my point is, like, how many people actually, of the quote-unquote alt-right, actually voted for president, you know, or for Trump? And my, I don't know, what? Maybe a million, maybe a couple million. The guy got like 62 million votes. So like, it's not that significant in a thing, but it's unfortunately, as a guy who runs a counterculture website, something that affects my life because, oh yeah, like after the election, there was a point where anything I posted on social media, there was going to be just tons of people just talking shit to me and just like openly saying racist shit, you know? Like, so this idea that like Trump hasn't emboldened these people, it's like, no, I mean, I saw it firsthand. Like, that wasn't happening before, you know? And well, then afterwards,
have all this stuff with ICE going on now. It's very obvious that he tries to appeal to nativists, and he's actually in a long tradition of these type of people. I mean, going back to the Know Nothing movement.
I don't even know what the Know Nothing movement is. You'd have to explain that one to me.
It's one of the original nativist movements. It was an anti-Catholic, anti-Irish and Italian movement.
Oh, really?
I think it was the early 20th century. It's all a repeat of stuff that has happened in the past. History repeats itself.
Absolutely. And you know, yeah, weirdly enough, it was actually right after the election that I unintentionally got immersed into how creepy the conspiracy side of the culture is. And like I said, I look at this stuff as being like beneath me. Like, come on, I don't have to punch down to this dumb shit, do I? Like, I shouldn't, and this is, I still feel this way. Like, I shouldn't have to point out to people that Dave Rubin is funded by the Koch brothers, right? You know, I'm glad that Joe Rogan was doing that. Like, I shouldn't have to point out that Jordan B. Peterson is really literally being propped up by shitty religious billionaires. Like, I shouldn't have to explain that to you, that this is just a rebranding of Fox News. And what's so crazy about it too is like, this is exactly what they said they wanted to do. Like, that's what's so embarrassing about people falling for this is like, people infiltrated white nationalist movements, you know, and like, this is what they say in their secret meetings and have been saying for a long time is like, oh, we have to mainstream this up. Like, they are aware of the fact that, you know, openly being a racist can get you fired, and that's generally frowned down upon due to, you know, years of civil rights activism. So there's been a concerted effort for these people to then say, you know, oh, I'm a classic liberal. I'm not a conservative. And that's exactly what they're doing. And it's like, oh no, I don't believe in all the crazy religion. I'm in the comparative mythology and Jung, you know? And so it's like, they telegraphed this strategy and now they're implementing this strategy. And apparently just because Joe Rogan is so influential, and I didn't realize that he had like the biggest podcast in the world until recently. I was like, what? Really? Like, no wonder I see so much of this shit in my feed, you know? And so, yeah, like, and like I said, I've seen way too many people falling for this. And to me, it seems like just this completely obvious tactic, and one that, weirdly enough, I think came through disinfo.com. And this is another funny aspect of disinfo.com, is we were running Russian propaganda for years, and I never knew why. Like, I never got it. Like, I was like, and it's a show called Breaking the Set with Abby Martin and Lee Camp. We used to, before he even got a show on Russia Tonight, we ran that. And so Russia has been funding progressive journalism for years in America, and it's a sad state where if you're a progressive journalist in America that wants to do like anti-corporate journalism, you sort of have to get paid by a place like Russia, because our media is so controlled by, you know, corporate advertising dollars that they're not going to like pay for that shit. So you almost like had to work for Russia, except the problem was that there's a pretty, they're doing this for a reason. Like, Russia isn't funding progressive journalism because they want the American public to be more educated, you know? Like, that's not why they're doing this. They're doing this so progressives hate liberals so much that they don't fucking vote, or they vote third party. They're doing this so that when Bernie Sanders has an election rigged against him, against Hillary Clinton, that his base turns on Hillary Clinton and refuses to vote or votes third party. That is the exact reason that they were running this progressive journalism for years. They weren't doing it to help your progressive causes. And I've again, now I felt like a duty to explain this to people. Like, it's like, this isn't that hard. Like, Russia does not pay progressives in America, progressive journalists in America, to help progressive causes. They do it for the exact opposite reason, which is to fund, to help Republicans and conservative causes. Like, they're doing this for the exact opposite reason that you think that they're doing it. And that, and you know, that's weirdly enough, though, when you get the alt-right who's now into, you know, like the occult and stuff, disinfo was, you know, running this stuff through our site for years. So this new wave of the intellectual dark web and the art and the alt-right seems, strikes me as so creepily influenced by Russia. And if, you know, if you, the minor amount you look into Russian propaganda, it's like, oh yeah, that's what they've been playing both sides for years. This is just what they do, right? You know, and now this has come to America, and I do get the sense that we are just not prepared for it. And I get that sense because when I try and explain it to people, a lot of people are just like, no, you know, no, that's not what's going on. And I'm like, how can you not see that's what's going on? That's clearly what's going on here. Like, you know, Assange was not helping your progressive cause that you thought he was. Like, he was not doing that. He was doing the exact opposite. Julian Assange was, by his own admission, trying to get Republicans elected. That was his whole purpose, you know? And
I was going to say, I try to be careful about it. I definitely don't trust Assange. I've talked to Abby Martin's brother, Robbie. He's mm-hmm. done some decent documentaries and stuff. Yeah. I won't say that they're acting in bad faith, although I do think RT has an agenda, you know?
I don't think that they, in fact, I've listened to Abby Martin on podcasts, and I think she is completely oblivious. Like, you know, I think her and Lee Camp both have absolutely no clue why that Russia is paying them to do their shows. And yet, I follow these people on Twitter, and if there's one thing you won't say, hey, the Republicans just basically, in a time of unparalleled wealth inequality and corporate profits, they just passed the utter ridiculous tax plan that just basically gave rich people and corporations. They basically just said, hey, let's give more resources to the people that need them the least. And they even got rid of shit like the estate tax. The second, Trump got into office, you know, everybody hated Obama because of the drone bombing, rightfully so. That just got ramped up immediately. We spent $70 billion more on the military budget. Abby Martin and Lee Camp are not going to point that out. They are going to spend all of their time talking about how corrupt the Democrats are. And when a really shitty policy comes in, their position on it going to be, they're the only time basically, and I've been watching this stuff because, again, I inherited like the Disinfo Twitter account. So like, we followed these people because we ran their shit for years. There was years that Abby Martin was the biggest contributor for Disinfo. She might still be. She might have posted more to that site than anyone else in the history of the site. And yeah, no, and I absolutely, I don't think that they get it at all. Like, I don't think that these people that are doing this have any idea why Russia is paying them to do this stuff. Like, I don't think that they understand it at all. And not only that, I think that they do good work. I think Breaking the Set is a good show. Most of the time when I watch Redacted Tonight, I agree with what Lee Camp's saying. I don't think the guy is funny. But simultaneously, the reason they're doing it, like the only time they're going to talk about these horrible Republican policies is when a Democrat votes for it. And then they'll tweet like, oh, do you see like four Democrats voted for this thing that was completely proposed by their, you know, and that's the way they cover it. And I don't even know if they're doing that intentionally. Like, and I guess my point is this, Abby Martin, well, the other thing about Abby Martin is that she got her show on RT got canceled. And when did it get canceled? Oh, not long after she vocally, openly, publicly questioned Putin's invasion of Crimea. And so she publicly questions that, and breaking the set is conveniently canceled like 3 months later, right? Yeah, it's a big shocker there. And then weirdly enough, though, like if you don't believe me what I'm saying, then how did Abby Martin spend 2016 during the election, during Bernie Sanders? What did she do? She did a super in-depth takedown of Hillary Clinton. And that's exactly my point. Like, the strategy is pretty obvious. It's just like, did she say anything bad about the Republicans during 2016? She wanted to tell her progressive fans, Hillary Clinton, don't vote for her. Who does that help exactly? You know, like, it doesn't help. It doesn't help progressive causes, you know. Yeah, and you're right. You are absolutely right that I do not think that these people directly have any idea that that is why their stuff is getting funded by Russia. You know, I didn't have a clue. Disinfo was running Breaking the Set for years. I thought it was shady. The first time I ever watched that show, the first question in my mind was, why the fuck is Russia funding this? You know, like, why? Like, I don't get it. Why are they funding this, like, great show that's having, like, Noam Chomsky and, like, all these progressive, interesting left-wing guests on? And it wasn't until 2016 and when everybody started turning on Bernie Sanders that I was like, oh, okay, that's why. Like, that's it. That's why. Now it makes perfect sense. Like,
in Abby and Robbie's defense, I know they have been doing a lot more shows on Trump now that are very critical of him. So I'm glad about that. They do stuff with Media Roots now.
Yeah, and I like her, and I think she does good work. And like I said, I didn't get it. If back then, if you would have offered me a show on RT, like, do you think I would have taken? I would have absolutely said yes. Absolutely, I would have done it. But we have to be more savvy of this. And, you know, weirdly enough, I've had a lot of people pitch me stuff at Disinfo that's all about how dangerous Russiagate is to progressive journalists. And I agree with it, but I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm not printing that. And the reason is, one, you're like making my point. Why, rather than the absolutely horrible like policies that we're pushing through, like they're now, I mean, the Republican Congress is now trying to go after Social Security and Medicaid. So it's just like reverse Robin Hood, fuck the poor bullshit, you know, pro-military. And like, why of all these issues is that what you want to write about? Why do you want to write about how Russiagate and the idea that Russia has been manipulating our elections is dangerous progressive causes? And furthermore, I'm not saying it's not, but also I think our progressive causes have to recognize that taking Russian money is maybe more damaging to your cause than fucking the whole controversy around you taking money. You know what? I think the problem is more that you're taking money from Russia and they're not helping you. You know, like, I think you have to actually look in the mirror and say, oh, fuck, why was Russia paying us for this shit, right? It wasn't to help your progressive causes. They were doing it for the exact opposite reason of helping your progressive causes. And until we can come to terms with that and realize that, then yes, I'm sorry, the damage that the paranoia of Russia is causing your progressive causes, I think, is definitely lesser than the fact that Russia is funding your progressive causes. Anywho.
Well, I think this segues into like this interesting topic of conspiracy culture, because I'm one of these, like, you know, lefty guys that think, I take the idea of parapolitics seriously. I think conspiracies and corruption happens. I just happen to think that a lot of times the right wingers pushing conspiracy theories are often part of conspiracies. You know, Alex Jones is funded by Sinclair Broadcasting. That
is it?
New Age show, one of the big New Age podcasts, Red Ice Radio, they used to be a New Age show, and then they turn all alt-right and white nationalist. And now they're like, videos are like real slick and like very high production values. Who's funding these people? You know, these right-wing conspiracy nuts that never ask, well, maybe the conspiracy is that these people are getting the most coverage now.
Yeah, no, I agree with you completely. And that's exactly it. I mean, and again, some of this is so obvious. Like, I didn't actually know that Alex Jones was being funded by Sinclair. But, I mean, Roger Stone, who's been a Republican operative for however long, who's Nixon's, you know, big political – the guy, you know, like, total douchebag. He literally has Nixon tattooed on his fucking back, right? Like, this lunatic has been on Rush Limbaugh's show. So you're right. It's eventually – and you know what? And that is what I find hilarious is that, you know, I pointed this out, and I don't know if I'm sure other people have made this connection, but where what strikes me as weird about it is that this is like, so basically during the Bush administration, when that was going on, it was the Bush administration and the doubling in size of the military industrial complex that happened during that and the creation of the surveillance state and all this stuff that, you know, now seems just like a blatant fact that wasn't happening before 9/11 and George W. Bush being elected, who again was elected in the shadiest way imaginable, the most weird, controversial election, and all that shit was right out in the open, just like Trump. Like, both of the last two Republican presidents who haven't won the popular vote, right, who got elected in the weirdest way. So back then, it was all about, you know, exploiting evangelicals, right? You know, and again, evangelicals are like weird conspiracy theorists. They're people that a lot of them believe that everybody was going to vanish into thin air out of nowhere, right? And then, you know, they'd be left, the true believers, after everyone vanished, be this utopia that was left for them, right? And so I do definitely think somewhere around when Obama got into office, one, there was just this massive effort to just ramp up racism, which worked. Because, like, Bush administration was such a failure that they had no play. So they were like, racism, that's our play, right? That's how we're going to do it. Should have never worked. It has worked so far. And then I also think you're right. Like, I think the same people that looked at evangelical Christians and said, you know what? Those people will believe fucking anything, you know, we could convince those people of fucking anything, you know, and we could convince these people to vote completely against their self-interest. We can convince them to support a fucking war that makes absolutely no sense by any expert opinion. So I definitely think those exact same propagandists looked at, and that's the thing is, I don't follow conspiracy culture. So, like, it was too late when this is going on, you know, by the time I was aware that this is how bad it has gone, you know, like, it was already too late. Like, this stuff was already, like, popular, and I was like, oh shit, you know, so now I'm, like, trying my best to do whatever I can to, like, put the genie back in the bottle. But yeah, I think those people looked at conspiracy culture and said, you know what? Those same idiots that think that people are going to vanish into thin air, look on the internet, man. Like, there are other people that think the moon landing was faked. There are people that think that reptilian aliens run the world and have infiltrated the elites. There are people that think the pedophile Illuminati is secretly controlling Hollywood. And a lot of these people are also religious, you know, because Illuminati conspiracy theory in particular is, it's all religious. The entire concept between Illuminati conspiracy theory is that Christianity equals good, occult equals bad. There are these evil occultists that are running the world. It's not being run by Christians. It's being run by Satan. It's the satanic panic rehashed, right? Like, that's all it fucking is. Like, the satanic panic went out of style and became of the 80s, went out of style, and everybody realized it was retarded and honestly dangerous and that innocent people went to jail because of it. And so they rebranded it as the Illuminati. And so I don't know when this happened, but you're right. I think that these conservative propagandists, the billionaires that run Fox News, and particularly on the libertarian, you know, the hip side of being right-winger, you know, they saw an opportunity there. They're like, man, we can convince these, just like we can convince evangelicals of anything, we can convince conspiracy theory people of anything. And it's really worked. And I was referencing above Top Secret earlier. That's now like a right wing. That's been one of the bigger conspiracy theory websites on the internet. And that's now like mostly right wing shit. Has nothing to do with UFOs anymore, you know. And New Dawn magazine, which you know, I've seen some people that I write, like Gary Lockman and Mitch Horowitz, write for them, and it's like, dude, they're like retweeting Breitbart shit every fucking minute now, you know. And so that's another thing, is that they realized there was a market. Like, there's a market there. And unfortunately, these people, some of these magazines that were probably struggling, were like, oh, if we go all alt right racist, that'll get up subscription sales. And, you know, who's to say that's why Joe Rogan's show isn't the big, I don't think it was the biggest show in the country before he started having Ben Shapiro and all these people on, right? You know?
Oh, God, Ben Shapiro, that midget.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So anyways, and then you got me with disinfo.com, and how much funding are we getting from any billionaires, from anyone? None. This is what I'm dealing with. I'm up against people that have massive amounts of funding, and you know, I'm going to try and work in making it profitable, but you're right. Right now, I'm trying to do something with a legacy brand and media infrastructure that somebody invested in years ago, and trying to take on, you know, these people that have massive revenue streams. And again, I'll do what I can. And you know, I really though, I just think that, you know, hey, yeah, maybe the trap here is magic. Get into that stuff, guys. now you're in my world, and yeah, I want to see how well that goes for you, because it's not going to go well for you. Anyway, keep going, man.
This whole, like, the conspiracy thing is so interesting, because it even goes back before, like, the 2000s. You know, back in the 90s when they would all – when all the right-wingers would go on and on about Whitewater. But, you know, those were the same right-wingers that were silent when it came to Iran-Contra, you know, and now Ollie North is running the NRA. Boy, oh boy.
Yeah. Oh yeah, no, exactly. And Roger Stone, who was like a Nixon political operative, like that guy is like one of the prime movers in getting Trump elected, and is always on Alex Jones, and like the ties between right wingers and the alt right, and you know, it's not like they're not like hugely obfuscated, you know, obfuscated. Like, this shit is obvious. Like, it's right there. And the fact that people, but you're right, as Americans, we weren't prepared for it, because for so many years, right-wing propaganda meant fucking Bill O'Reilly, right? And Sean Hannity. And shit that's just so over the top and obvious. This idea of funding progressive causes and them not even knowing why you're funding them. This whole idea of marketing, you know, oh, we're the new counterculture because we believe what your grandparents did, not your parents. You know, this is new. It's totally new. And I haven't seen it in yeah. So again, a new disturbing trend that I don't think is going to last that long, though. I mean, I don't think this stuff is going away, but I think the backlash against it is going to be a lot stronger than they realize. And that's just classic, you know, again, sorcery, that I think these people are getting into stuff where they're starting something and they're not seeing, you know, every action has an equal and opposite reaction. And I think the reaction to this wave is going to be more than opposite. You know, I think it's going to be sort of brutal, but I don't think it's going away either, you know. And like, you know, I channeled things and had visions for years, and I don't think this wave of American authoritarianism is unfortunately going to go away. I don't think it's going to be as strong as it is, but I think it's going to be here for a while, unfortunately. So we need to get better at dealing with it, which is, I suppose, in a way, what we're trying to go do with podcasts like this.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned the channeling stuff earlier when we were talking about magic. I was going to ask, there seems to be two lines of thought with a lot of people that came out of the 90s cult scene.
Yeah.
You know, on the one side, you have the Richard Metzgers, who sort of view chaos magic as sort of just psychology dressed up in a different sort of esoteric language. And then there's people like Jason Louvre, or Love, I don't know how you pronounce it. Sorry, Jason. But he would say that, no, you're actually contacting entities. Which side of the debate do you fall on?
Oh, you're contacting entities. Yeah, like I said, I was summoned into this shit. And you know what? Weirdly enough, you brought up people like Robert Anton Wilson and the counterculture earlier. And I have a pretty common saying. And you know what? Where I get frustrated with counterculture, a lot of people that look back on that period and be like, you know, I've heard people use the term the second wave of the second psychedelic revolution and stuff like that, as if that's what's going on now. And I seem to be the only one that points out, like, well, if we're going to do it again, we need to do it fucking right this time. You know, like and the problem with the counterculture and all of these authors, Timothy Leary, Robert Anton Wilson, Terence McKenna, the problem is that they didn't take shamanism seriously. And the failure of the counterculture in my mind has always been a failure to take shamanism seriously. This is always been the problem with counterculture. So you see that in all of these figures. And, you know, I point this out because of my own personal experience, but in shamanism, you know, there, and yeah, let me clarify what I mean by that. I mean, literally, and so basically, white people, psychedelics in particular, are an area of study where we can't deny that Western scientism, we have to acknowledge the flaws in human psychology, and that we are not, as much as we'd love to be rational and we look at this idealized state, we are not rational. We're conformist, and that we are 80% conformist, 20% rational. You know, that's the way we work. There's so much psychological research in psychology, you know, and I got a degree in psychology, in social psychology, like demonstrating this. And so with psychedelics, science wasn't what discovered these. In fact, our beliefs and our beliefs about rationality, which were so much formed by our weird beliefs about spirituality and our monotheistic religions, and we love to ignore that those things are related. But so much of that is, you know, psychedelics were literally a thing that was right in front of our faces for thousands of years. You know, it was right there, but that was the enemy's religion. And not even the enemy. The people that we were exterminating, essentially, and committing imperialistic genocide against had this psychedelic religion. And our belief in rationality combined with our belief in, you know, the Bible or whatever imperialistic religion that we had at the time was the precise thing that rather than being a candle in the dark that, you know, people like Carl Sagan loved to maintain that it was the precise thing that was blinding us. You know, as Terence McKenna like used to say, the dominator culture has led the human species into a blind alley. And that's exactly it. And what's so funny about Western culture and psychedelics is that, you know, we completely ignored them and looked at them like, oh, that's just primitive savage thing, because we looked at the world as this defeat. Like we had, and I was literally even taught this, you know, in my educational upbringing, that we had defeated animism. Like we waged a war against animism and we stamped that shit out. And it was this weird belief that prevented us from seeing psychedelic drugs, which were right in front of our face. And we didn't see them until Albert Hofmann designed a man-made drug by accident, you know, and that's what's so hilarious about it. It's like
LSD.
Yeah, we were still blinded, and it wasn't until Albert Hofmann like accidentally discovered this man-made thing that now it wasn't this primitive superstition anymore. Now it was a chemist. This guy was a scientist, right? You know, he was a chemist. He developed this thing, and his discovery would have been far more impressive if that's what he was trying to do, right? If he looked at psychedelic cultures and said, hey, these tribes use psychedelic mushrooms in their rituals, I bet I could design something that's really similar to that. But that's not... It was accidental. He was not trying to do that at all. I don't even accurately remember what he was trying to do, but he accidentally discovers LSD. And then all of a sudden in Western culture, now it's not this primitive religion anymore, you know? Now it's science. So this thing that had blinded us to what was right in front of our face, suddenly it had to be rephrased as science, right? And then all of a sudden Western culture keeps, you know, caught on to it. And then you get, you know, people like Larry and McKenna and Robert Anton Wilson, and also who was a complete fraud, Carlos Castaneda, but weirdly enough, I think Carlos Castaneda, as much of a fraud as he was, actually was more on point than those guys, because especially with where we're getting culturally with cultural appropriation and that concept. So another way to rephrase psychedelic culture would be this. There had been cultures that made or societies throughout human history that based their spiritual practice around the ritualistic use of hallucinogens for thousands of years. We basically committed genocide and dominated these cultures, because you can see obviously why not thinking that way. Like if your culture involves hallucinogens, you're probably way more wrapped up in the spirit realm than you are in the regular realm. And you might do things like design high grade weaponry. You might think I want to destroy the environment. You might think it's my job to create empires, you know. It's this detachment from the psychedelic reality and this religion that causes those things. And so after thousands of years of these cultures using this, all of a sudden then, because we accidentally discover this and now it's chemistry and science, we over and over again, and you see this with Leary, Wilson, all these people, that this idea that, you know what, those shamanisms that have thousands of years more experience with this stuff than us, yeah, you don't really know what you're talking about. You know, your insistence on a spirit realm, your insistence that you're connected to the environment, yeah, that's bullshit. You know what? We're going to turn this stuff into science, right? You know, and this is what essentially happened. Like, all of them, like, Leary was a psychologist, McKenna had a very scientific bent, Robert Anton Wilson had an engineering perspective. You're now seeing this with the psychedelic science these days, but it's fundamentally flawed, and that you're thinking that for some reason you have a level of expertise over these people that have thousands of years more expertise in these fields than you do. And so, no, I'm sorry. I am the one that, like, I'm going to step up and say, like, no, they are onto something there. There is a spirit realm. Astral projection works. Science doesn't even understand what dreams are. In most shamanic cultures, dreams are of extreme importance and considered just as real as your waking experience. And most of my work is really involves reading my own dreams and inducing higher dreams and hypnagogic states largely through weed and stuff rather than just hallucinogens. So, yeah, I mean, this is it, this is where McKenna, Leary, and Robert Anton Wilson is a classic example. He gives you this, this concept of chapel perilous, and, when you enter this crazy psychedelic state, only two things are going to happen. You're either going to wind up paranoid or you're going to wind up an agnostic. And that's just shit that, you failed, dude. That was your failure. The third option is you turn into a shaman. Like, that's the winning option. It's like thinking, there's a game, and the only options are you tie or you lose. That's essentially what Robert Anton Wilson, it's like a World Cup match. And the only thing that can happen in a World Cup match is either a team ties or you lose. That's apparently why Robert Anton Wilson's, and he tied essentially, I think, with Robert Anton Wilson. No. But the third option there is that you fucking win. And that's the point. And weirdly enough, McKenna can be said the same thing. As much as I love McKenna, I did not know this. This is actually a really interesting story. And sorry to rant for too long, but yeah, let me get this one out. So with Terrence McKenna, I had a dream that mushrooms killed Terrence McKenna. It was a very odd dream at one point. And I keep a live journal of my channeling on social media. And so I posted this dream that I had, and it was weird because it was like, basically the premise behind the dream is that Terrence McKenna sort of wished he was a musician or an artist more than a scientific type. That was essentially the dream. And like, everybody knew that he was going to die, and he was getting a GoFundMe together to like record this final album. And it was this metaphorical thing that was like showing him as me when I was younger and starting out recording my sampler driven head fuck kind of music that I was using as kind of a shamanic rite. And it was sort of showing me that, but there was one point in the dream where I looked at McKenna and I could tell this is the way dreams work. There's this inner communication. I could just looking in his face, I'm like, oh, the mushrooms killed you. You went too far with mushrooms and they killed you. Like, I got this. So I post this vision on Facebook and somebody points out to me, like, oh, by the way, did you know that his brother came out with a book, and his brother mentions in his book that he had a really bad trip in the late 80s, and basically the entire time that he was popular in the 90s, he wasn't really taking psychedelics very often at all because he had this absolutely horrifying trip. And then, oh, by the way, he ended up getting a mushroom-shaped tattoo in his brain that killed him, right? And, like, I didn't know any of this, but I had this dream, and then I posted it, and then, like, people point this out, and I do some more research, and I'm like, yeah, there it is. His brother's talking about it. There's multiple reports that this tumor that he developed in his brain was literally like a mushroom-shaped tumor that developed in his brain. So this concept, and again, this is the issue. Terrence McKenna is a great guy, but he wasn't taking shamanism seriously. He was looking at it and being like, you know what? We're going to turn this into science. Like, it's all about the chemical structure of the mushroom. It's like about that, but no, it's not. It's about the spirit world. It's about the dream states. It's not about that, and that is so difficult for us to accept. And yeah, so I'm on Jason Lufsa their side, I'd say far more hardcore than he is. And in fact, I think he's made a recent turn on that front, because I'd actually heard him on a podcast years ago where he was seemingly ambivalent to the concept of the spirit world. So it's good to hear that he's come around. And again, when I'm saying this, like, do I think that's an easier conclusion to come? Like, no, I've had a weird past that's driven me there. And I was in denial about this reality for long. But this is why psychedelic culture keeps failing. We got to quit telling ourselves that we understand what's going on with psychedelics better than these cultures that have thousands of years more experience than us using this stuff. No, they absolutely 100% understand this stuff in a way that we do not understand this stuff. And weirdly enough, of your psychedelic icons, Carlos Castaneda was sort of the only one that's from the 60s that was really pointing that out. And yet that guy was also a total fraud. But he was a fraud who read a lot about shamanism. That was the difference. He took the shamanism seriously. Those other guys didn't. But yet he was a fraud in a completely different way. But anyways, I've been ranting for a while. What else do you want to talk about?
Well, I was going to ask. I don't know if you've ever done ayahuasca tourism or done DMT, but have you ever gotten elves?
I attain these states more through, and this is what differs from me and where I really, like I said, what I do, it's a combination of shamanism in the Western esoteric tradition. And I've never actually done ayahuasca or weed or DMT, actually. Weirdly enough, I do a podcast with a guy. Hopefully, I'm actually going to try DMT for the first time in the next couple of weeks.
You have smoked weed, though.
I've smoked shuntas of weed, and I'm just one of those people. And the reason I'm probably talking to you here right now and, you know, run a website that covers the counterculture is because I just have an insanely strong reaction to things like psychedelic, to things like LSD and psilocybin. Like, I see shit everywhere. And if you want to, I mean, I can even say I make my own art, but if you want to look up Luke Brown's Baphomet or Jester Terrestrial, I mean, that's some of the best visual representative stuff that I've seen where, I mean, psychedelics to me has never been about, and I took them once. I mean, the first time I took psychedelics was 18, and, you know, most other people that I took them with, you know, again, it was kind of a party thing. It was fun. And for me, all of a sudden, I'm reading about, you know, Carlos Castaneda and Whitley Strieber and, like, just immersing myself in all this weird literature to try and explain the utter strangeness of what happened to me. And, you know, the best way I can describe it, it's like staring into the face of a higher intelligence. You know, it's like this form of rapidly mutating art, you know, and it's this, in this timeless realm of hyper-intelligent art entities that you're interacting with. And so Castaneda was sort of important for me at a young age to realize that, you know, other cultures have been, you know, like in Western culture, we look at this as a recreational drug, and there have been cultures ever since there have been people that's been their religion is this. So it made me realize that I wasn't like completely, you know, this wasn't a weird fringe belief. It wasn't like, oh, what I saw was crazy. But as time has gone on, yeah, I mean, I also started playing around with Robert Monroe's techniques for astral projection, like 6 months after I had my mind completely blown by psychedelics. And then I started playing around with, I'm not even going to lie. I think I got, you know, mentally addicted to marijuana at a fairly young age. I think I was probably 20 or so by the time I was like, you know, you don't get physically addicted to this stuff, but I'm just one of those people that just loves weed. And I started playing around with Robert Monroe's techniques for astral projection, which worked baffling me to no small degree. But then you look into the occult, and that's where the occult side comes in, is this idea of using weed-based sex meditation is something that can aid astral projection, is something that goes way back in the occult. And so I did start playing around with these weird techniques of combining astral projection with marijuana trance states at, like, you're talking age 18 and 19. And then I threw in kind of, you know, weird music on top of that. So, you know, and eventually I was summoned into this occult. So that's the occult end of where I come at this stuff. And I've definitely found that I can have crazy, when I'm talking about channeling books, I'm doing it far more through marijuana trance, intentionally induced marijuana trance states and just dream states, you know, I've been actively exploring. And again, this is kind of a more shamanic thing of actively exploring my dream states, from a very young age, you know, like when I was young, I thought maybe I was sort of a slacker, you know, and I was just this kid that, you know, smoked a lot of pot and played around with astral projection. But I do realize looking back that, you know, there's a lot of practice. And I was, in a way, when you look at something, yeah, our culture would look at you as being lazy for doing something that I think was maybe something that I pursued that has lifelong benefits, that I learned to communicate with and understand my dreams in a way that's enormously beneficial to me to this day. And in my mind, that's sort of what magic is about. It's sort of seeing the reality in a completely different way. And weirdly enough, the Crowleyan kind of concept of bending reality to your will, I don't agree with that at all. The more I've gotten into this stuff, it's like, I think you're sort of like looking in the ocean and saying, that wave, I'm going to catch that wave. Like, you know, you're not really bending your will in reality. You're trying to tap into something that's much larger than yourself. And I think when you do that, it can feel like you're sort of bending reality your will. But I disagree that that's even what's happening with something like magic at all. I think that's a fundamentally incorrect way of looking at it, in a way.
I wanted to get into the last thing I sort of wanted to get into, because it's back in the news, is the UFO stuff. We'll get into that, but you mentioned Whitley Strieber. I've always found Whitley kind of fascinating. He's, of course, the Communion story, which he was a horror fiction author who claims to have been abducted by aliens, and like that's where the anal probe stuff comes from that you see made fun of in South Park. But it's kind of weird, because whether or not his story is true, I get the impression Whitley Strieber actually believes that. And if he believes it, then I can understand why he would. I mean, the trauma has to be real to him to some extent if he believes it. So I was wondering, what's your take on Whitley?
Yeah, no, it's an interesting story, actually, and how I got into it, because, again, I, right around this time in my youth, and I'm 40 now for anyone that's listening, and so when I was 18 years old, I had a very, most people don't have this happen to them when they're 18 year old, and yet it's almost like classic kind of vision questy kind of shit, really, where, so this all started with, I mean, I'd smoked weed and had some weird hallucinations with weed, but then I did psychedelic mushrooms, and that just completely, and there was another weird thing that happened when I did psychedelics, was I had this experience that for days, I was looking at myself in a third person perspective, kind of above myself, and these states would kind of just happen at random, and then I'd snap back into normal perception, and it felt completely normal, and yet I still look back at it this day. So then I delved into this. So how I got into Whitley Strieber is that I'd say probably less than a month after I had my first psychedelic experience, which was accompanied by this bizarre, you know, spirit world, third person looking at multi dimensions of reality at the same time, kind of experience. I bought Whitley Strieber's book as a joke in in a thrift store. So I was going to UC Santa Cruz at the time. And that's actually a weird synchronicity too. I only went there briefly, but Jason Louv and I both went to, UC Santa Cruz, briefly. I don't think at the same time, but there's an odd synchronicity there. So I literally, I'm just at the thrift store trying to buy, you know, my cool quote unquote alternative clothes, you know, or whatever. Cause, back in the 90s and I saw communion from across the store, and it was this weird experience where I felt drawn to it, you know, I feel drawn to go buy this book, and it was only 99 cents, I remember. And so I bought it as a complete joke, because like everybody else in society, you're programmed to think, again, anal probes, this alien shit is ridiculous, right? And this just so happened to right after I had my mind blown by psychedelics. So I just decided I'm going to read this book as a joke. And because my mind had been completely, you know, expanded by mushrooms not long before, I was reading this book and I'm like, wait, what the fuck? That's sort of what Whitley is talking about here. He's not really talking about aliens. He's talking about these entities that are, you know, essentially exist beyond the realms of death, not really from another planet, you know? And so I became immediately, because I was trying to explain to myself what the hell was going on with me, what Whitley was saying was very similar to sort of what I had experienced. So I was forced to kind of confront that. So I went from being this guy who, you know, like most people, thinks that the alien phenomenon is a joke, to somebody who ended up reading tons of stuff about that when I was younger. I mean, between the ages of 18 and 25, I probably read a gajillion books by various people who have written these. And I would recommend anyone to read some of this stuff, and anyone who's into psychedelics in particular. Whitley Strieber actually just came out with a book recently. It's with comparative religion theologist
Jeffrey Kripal.
Yeah, Jeffrey Kripal. Yes, called The Supernatural. If you've never read Whitley Strieber's books, that's the one I would recommend, because I'd forgotten, it'd been so long since I read this. And I'm somebody who writes about sex magic and weirdly having encounters with otherworldly entities, you know, weird kind of sexual encounters with otherworldly entities. Whitley Strieber has weirder stories about that than anybody I've ever read. It was reading that book, it was just a refresher. I'm like, I had even forgotten how utterly crazy these things that Whitley Strieber is talking about. And that's it. It's like, people don't understand. Whitley Strieber is not telling you that this is aliens. He's not at all. And then there's other people like John Mack.
I was going to mention John Mack as soon as you said that. Yeah.
And again, I have a degree in psychology, so it's nice to dismiss this stuff, but John Mack was a Harvard psychiatrist, a Pulitzer Prize-winning Harvard psychiatrist, who wrote a couple popular books about his work with other people like Whitley Strieber. There's a guy, Jeremy Vaney, who does a podcast on Whitley Strieber's network called The Experience, which is great, where people call in and talk about this stuff. And weirdly enough, when I'm talking about this, I have more in common with, if you look at how strange my experience, I was summoned into the occult. That's what happened. I know nobody believing this is talking about, but that's what happened. This weird shrouded entity showed up in my room when I was in a weird sleep state one night, snapped its fingers, unhypnotized me, and was like, you're... And once it did that, I realized that what I was doing wrong. What it showed me was dude, you have... You know, no different, I'm a huge basketball fan, nobody than saying, hey, dude, you're 6 feet tall, maybe you're 6'8", maybe you should take up basketball. You know, it was you have these abilities that you're ashamed of, and you shouldn't be ashamed of this stuff. You know, it's this can work towards your advantage. You have these amazing skills, and you're afraid of these things. And this entity just instantly turned that around, and I can straight up say that my life got, I was at a super dark point in my life at this point, and once that happened, my life started improving exponentially, immediately, and I started doing magic the next day, basic versions of sigil magic. and kind of adopting a more philosophy of chaos magic to my spiritual practice. And this happens to me, like I have weird experiences all the time. I could do an entire podcast just talking about that stuff. But yeah, so I mean, when I read stuff, like I have more in common with these people that talk about their weird UFO encounters, quote unquote alien encounters, than I do anybody that writes about the occult or stuff like that. I mean, a lot of people in psychedelics have similar kind of encounters to this. But yeah, absolutely. And what John Mack points out, and this is the important thing about Whitley Strieber. Yes, absolutely. This guy is sincere. He is not telling you he knows what the fuck is going on. When you listen to Whitley Strieber, he is not telling you, oh, there are gray aliens from this galaxy. No, he is saying, I don't know what the fuck is going on. More to the point, when he wrote Communion, one, there was a huge negative response to it, which we need to acknowledge as a culture that, you know, just like there's racism or homophobia or sexism, that, yeah, absolutely, altered this idea that there are higher beings in us. There is such a hostility towards this concept. Any esoteric spiritual practice, I mean, this is where witch hunts come from. There's a huge bias against this stuff, an enormous bias against shamanic beliefs, shamanic philosophy. And it's probably more profound than racism and sexism. And Whitley Strieber dealt with that, man. Like, when he came out with that stuff, there was such an enormous backlash against that dude. I mean, and I don't think he was prepared to reel it. John Mack as well. John Mack has said straight up, if I knew the negative way that people were going to react to what I did, I wouldn't have even done it, you know? And this is a Harvard psychiatrist, you know? And so they dealt with this blowback, but what John Mack points out and what Whitley Strieber points out is like, it's not just Whitley Strieber that's dealing with this. This is like a semi-regular aspect of human psychology that you can't, so you can say, oh, it's not aliens, but what you can't say is that this isn't something that is fundamental about, you know, whether you want to believe it or not, 2 out of every 1,000,000 people that are born are going to have weird experiences where they encounter these gray aliens with weird black hole hypnotic eyes that project visions of other higher dimensional realities into their soul. That's a part of the human experience. Whether you want to call that a mental illness or not is up to you, but that's something you can't deny. And weirdly, it was John Mack's refusal to just say it's a mental illness that got him suspended from his position at Harvard. Again, we're talking about the controversy because what John Mack said was ultimately that what this seems to be saying is that we need to adapt science to take into consideration internal subjective states of consciousness, which is an obvious thing to say, but that was so controversial that he literally got suspended. And what he was really was told essentially was that if you were just going to say that this is a new mental illness, we're fine with that, but it's you telling us that we need to question science, which is dangerous, and we're going to suspend you, which is insane because I think it's obvious that science needs to think about things in a more holistic or shamanic perspective that takes the internal into account. And Whitley Strieber, the same team, as much as the backlash, and this is why Whitley Strieber still does do that. As much as he had a backlash to what he did, he got hundreds of thousands of letters from people all over the world talking about their experiences, which were basically identical. And one of the more fascinating things about that when he analyzed these letters is how much dead loved ones, you know, and like we want to say that this is aliens, but one of the most common themes that he found in all these experiences that he analyzed was the presence of people who have died. You know, like that my dead grandma who died when I was 5 was there with these aliens. You know, that was just as common as anything else about these experiences. So again, when you bring up aliens, people think you're talking about UFOs from another planet, and no, that's not it at all. It would be entities from the other side of time and the other side of death. And I've had direct encounters where this has been shown to me specifically, you know, like we're not from outer space. We are from the other side of time, and time is basically the thing, the structure that's holding the narrative that you call humanity together. But we're on another realm where that looks like one thing to us, like a story, a book, an album, like a movie. Like that's all one thing. Your entire time stream is one thing, and we're on the other side of that, which is so much different than being from outer space. It's ridiculous. And also, I achieved that vision where I was shown this kind of stuff by doing very similar kind of weed-based magic to what Grant Morrison was doing. And what was Grant Morrison shown? Really similar shit. And then you get into Robert Anton Wilson, whose book Cosmic Trigger is all about how prevalent this idea has been throughout human history, that there's always been people that engage in this kind of weed-based sex magic. And they always this idea of someone summoning entities and them showing you giving you a lesson plan about the nature of time. That's always seemingly what these things want to talk about, you know? And again, this goes back to disinfo.con and the classic, Grant Morrison speech. With anyone who's listening to this, who is, finds disinfo interesting, go listen to Grant Morrison at disinfo.com right now. That's one of those things that just sort of, it happened in the year 2000 and it still kind of lives running. And he's talking about exactly what I'm talking about right now, that you can engage in this weird kind of weed based form of sigil magic, and eventually gray aliens will show up and start telling you about the higher nature of time. And you know, I've, again, there's no science behind this, and yet this wasn't my idea, and I did it, and I replicated the same thing. So there is a weird, it gets a little bit sciencey when you get into the fact that you were in fact replicating other people's work. It's not like it was my idea to do this, you know. It was definitely something that people had been talking about for, as it turns out, thousands of years, really.
Well, it's interesting too with John Mack, because John Mack was sort of into Eastern religions, and he sort of had this view that I think Whitley's taken it up a bit, that it's these experiences with these entities basically are almost like transformational experiences, and that the people are actually can be positively transformed by the experiences through the trauma of it. Which
yeah.
Which is really interesting.
You know, you touched on an interesting subject there, because one of the things that I found, and that's actually what's interesting, and God, I did an acid ritual in 2012, where it's so funny that Whitley Strieber's book is called Communion. And in the middle of me, and this is maybe the first like full-on, like I was hinting with psychedelic ritualism for years, and I did sort of some semi-rituals, but this was the first one that I was like, I am going to just lay out a ritual. I'm going to do it on a day when my wife's not even around. I'm just going to like do this ritual that involved an album that I made, and actually a couple albums that got remastered. And so it was this auditory ritual that I did. And in the middle of it, I realized like, this is going to have some effects that I am not anticipating. Like, I knew it, like, intuitively, like, this is going to do something, right? And what it did was that shortly thereafter, I had this continual experience where, well, actually, the first time it happened, it's like this spirit entity, I mean, it's in a hypnagogic state, and the spirit entity showed up right next to me, and it presented itself as my naked wife, right? And like kind of like a, like communicating in the subjective language, like this is something you want, you know, obviously. And so then it like kind of bind with me, and it tried to pull me out of my body into the sky. Well, actually the first time it went behind me and it told me like communion with your holy guardian angel. Cause I'd kind of already done this, established this, you know, knowledge and conversation with your holy guardian angel, and that's been going on for years. And then so I did this ritual, and it sort of told me that communion with your holy guardian angel, that's the next thing. And yeah, and so it tried to pull me out of my body, and then I was just reading some of my next book that was talking about this. But then, so for years, they keep showing up as different entities and doing this exercise where they're trying to do this communion. It's so funny that the communion with your holy guardian angel is even almost referencing Whitley Strieber's communion. And so they were trying to pull me out of my body and up into the higher realms, but I couldn't do it because like each time it happened, like it's just too weird. And it wasn't like what was happening was scary. It's just like when I get, you know, this entity rips you out of your body, suddenly it felt so otherworldly. It's like this weird sense that this shouldn't be happening, right? And so I had all these encounters that I written, and I was documenting them pretty heavily, and I could never really do it, but I do think you're right. I guess the reason I brought that up is because there's Whitley Strieber, the communion, and then there's so these alien abduction encounters that seem traumatic, and yet my experience is, so, and weirdly enough, when I look at those people that have these experiences and how, like, I am so glad that I don't, that isn't what's happening. Like I said, I relate a lot to what these people are talking about, and yet simultaneously, I'm so glad that that's not what's happening to me, because it sounds horrifying, and like, these people are scared, whereas like me, like, this stuff happens to me, and like, I've had experiences where I was really pulled out of my body and into these higher realms, and other experiences where these entities came down, and they just kind of like, encountered me, and projected these visions of third, fourth, and fifth dimensional consciousness into my mind, and for me, like, this is just awesome, right? You know, like, it's not traumatizing. Like, it's like, from my perspective, like, I want that, and I get bored, like, when I have these experiences. Like, I want, even as terrifying as, like, this experience of, like, trying to get pulled out of your body, like, for me, it wasn't like terrifying at all. It was like, oh, more of that. Like, I wanted to do it so bad, you know, and it also gave me this empathy that like, though, but like that whole getting abducted, because that's essentially what they were showing me. Like, oh, I couldn't do it. It was too weird and like, you know, and eventually the craziest thing about that whole story is like that was happening for like 2 years and eventually just stopped happening. And what I was eventually shown is that the entities that were trying to pull me out of my body were just as scared as me as I was of them. And that was part of the problem, is that when my fear kicked in, they were becoming kind of just as scared. And like, that's why they were detaching, you know? Yeah. And it was very bizarre too, because it was sort of explained to me like, yeah, don't worry about it. You know, it's, you know, cause I was disappointed. Like, I wanted to have this abduction experience, and like the spirit world wanted to give it to me, and I couldn't make it happen. So yeah, I mean, it also gave me empathy for these alien contactees. I mean, like, you know, they showed me that and I couldn't even do it. So I can't even imagine how much that might traumatize you if they just went through with it. Like, you know, for me, there was almost like a courtesy. It's like, okay, you're freaking out, never mind. But with alien abductees, it's like, no, this is just happening. And weirdly enough, some of the most prominent alien contactees, like Whitley Strieber and Jeremy Vaney, who I like, and Jeff Ritzman, who used to do the Paratopia podcast with Jeremy Vaney, they talk about these experiences, and you're right, there's this level of just trauma and horrifying nature to it. And all of these people that I just mentioned, Strieber included, are almost like complete teetotalers, you know? So I find that fascinating. So like, my interpretation of that is there's people like me that kind of seek this stuff out and start playing around with like psychedelics and astral projection and magic at a young age and are sort of more comfortable with it. And then there's like other people. That's how I'd explain. If somebody asked me what a psychedelic, you know, what alien abduction experience was, I'd be like, what if I told you that some people that never take psychedelic drugs just have these crazy psychedelic experiences and yet they never took drugs? You know, there seems to be a level of that. And it seems to like, there does seem to be certain people that like, you know, they're not going to seek it out and they're almost running from it. So something inside of them, their higher self, their guardian entities, whatever you want to call it, is forced to reach in and then go, no, you're going to confront this whether you're running from it or not, you know? So there does seem to be a difference between people of the more shamanic path that are looking and are already like, I'm going to find this stuff out. And then there's other people that are sort of running from it. And the people that are running from it, unfortunately, seems to get it way worse, way more traumatic. And you're absolutely right. And that's, again, we love to look at this stuff as demonic and evil. And that's not what, like, Whitley Strieber or most of the people I reference. It's not this clear and cut, like, that was evil. It's like there was a level of spiritual growth that was initiated by this process, and probably a necessary level of spiritual growth that was probably, you know, much beneficial to these people. Absolutely.
Well, it's interesting too. I'm sort of agnostic about a lot of this stuff. I take that Robert Anton Wilson type approach, but yeah, it's interesting. Like, you look at the alien abductions from like Betty and Barney Hill onward. It's so different from all like the 50s contactees who were like all peace and love and the Space Brothers. Yeah. And then you have like the Jacques Vallée and John Keel theory of like ultra-terrestrials, where they're saying that stuff like fairies and those type of encounters that were talked about in like the Middle Ages are not that different from alien abduction phenomenon. It's just a reiteration.
God, one of the great books, and it's so funny, we just recommended the book by Whitley Strieber and Jeff Kripal called The Supernatural, and it's two different words, The Supernatural. But then there's another great book by Graham Hancock, who's largely more famous for, you know, his ancient archaeology stuff, which is coming to be, you know, ancient aliens, which has become rather embarrassing. Graham Hancock is the one amazing voice of reason to that. But he wrote a book called Supernatural, which actually Disinfo published probably only like 2010 or something like that. And that's the whole point to the book. But in this comparing shamanic initiation rites that with people that did this intentionally, like exactly what I was just talking about, the people that do this intentionally and how similar what they're saying is to what these people under hypnosis talk about in hypnosis and not in, it's not all hypnosis. Like I've referenced several other people, like Whitley Strieber and Jeremy Vaney and Jeff Ritzman and people that I'm talking about, like right there, like not all their experiences are. In fact, some of those people are very critical of hypnosis because it hasn't all happened under hypnosis. But that whole book is basically just talking about how unbelievably similar shamanic initiation rites and alien contact phenomena currently is. Like there are so many similarities to this. In fact, there's a particular thing in shamanic initiation rites where you're taken to the skies and then rebuilt by these kind of psychic surgeons Dimensions, which, you know, rebuilds you into your new configuration, which then comes back and manifests in our reality and influences it. So, yeah, the commonality between these things is huge, and we need to more recognize it. And it's exactly why Graham Hancock is so much better than any of these other ancient architecture people, because he looks at this ancient architecture phenomenon and says, you know, these people had a psychedelic religion, right? Like, maybe if you look at this through their religion, this will make more sense to you than if you just ignore the fact that the people building these sites clearly had a shamanic psychedelic religion. And you know, yeah, Graham has a great point there. It's like, you really, to understand why cultures all around the world started building these weird temples, temples to that were so influenced by astronomy, which was far beyond what Western civilization knew. I think you have to, like, take mushrooms in the middle of pitch darkness and stare up at the stars. I think if you do that, this is going to make a little more sense to you than if you didn't do that. And what's so funny about that, he's right. We know these cultures had a shamanic religion. Like, that's not, and so that's what separates Graham from everybody else, is that he genuinely experimented a lot with psychedelics, ayahuasca in particular, and mushrooms, and said, you know, I don't think you can understand this ancient architecture thing without taking their spiritual beliefs or their spiritual practices into account. And when you do take their spiritual practice into account, shit gets weird really quick. Now this idea of worshiping the stars and building your thing around the stars, like, now that's starting to make a lot more sense, because you're looking at the universe as being this kind of interconnected thing, and those being as kind of like living entities existing out in the universe.
The last thing I wanted to get on, and then, yeah, then we'll close out, just the, sure, on the UFO thing. It seems like for maybe since 2009, after the whole Disclosure Project thing seemed to fall apart, and Stephen Greer seemed to be exposed as, like, kind of a very weird, odd, almost cult-like character, UFOs seemed to fall off the radar, right? Yeah. And then just this year, Blink-182 frontman Tom DeLonge just shows up, and we're getting New York Times articles about, like, the Pentagon and UFOs, and it's insane. And I saw you wrote, you had a piece on that on Disinfo recently.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, this is something that I found interesting for a long time, and it's because of this chance, you know, pull that I had to read Whitley Strieber right after I'd taken mushrooms. It's like, and it's funny because I do the podcast, a weekly podcast with Jake Dill, and, like, he's a psychedelic person that just, immediately was like, UFOs are a bunch of bullshit, you know, like, this is what society programs you to think, and you're right. Like, there was even articles in major publications saying, whatever happened to the UFO, and weirdly enough, when you look at the statistics, UFO sightings just kept going up and up, so whatever happened to the UFO, you're right, there are complete fraudsters in the field, absolutely, and two, the media just stopped covering it, just like the media stopped covering protests, you know? It's like, we forget that part of the reason the protest movement was so successful back in the 60s is because they got massive media coverage. And then the media realized, oh, the way we deal about that is just don't cover it. And so not only did the media just stop covering this thing and saying, whatever happened to this stuff, but they were saying whatever happened to this stuff in a time when, if you looked, it was actually getting more and more popular and there was more and more sightings. And yeah, and so out of nowhere, Blink-182, and I, full confession, if I had to pick one of the worst bands in my, you know, taste is very subjective in art, and if you had to pick, in my mind, one of the worst bands in history, like, Blink-182 is up there, like, they're total, and Angels and Airwaves is almost even worse, but I have to actually step back and be like, well, you know, I gotta give this guy credit, like, he broke that, you know, there was a period where the media was intentionally ignoring UFO stories, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, now, just because of this guy's efforts, he managed to maintain some capital, and he had connections to a lot of prominent scientists and prominent people in the media, and he's brought it back to the point where he's giving media. So mad props. Forget every bad thing I said about that guy's music. I still think he's looking at it from a purely materialistic standpoint, but, you know, the one thing is that these articles are pointing out, which is funny, is that they're not saying anything new, really. They're saying exactly what we've known for years, you know, which is, for, when I say years, I'm not talking like 60 years, you know, possibly even 70 when you look back further, that, you know, people don't get this about the UFO phenomenon, is that there's hard evidence. Like, this shit has been caught on radar. You know, this isn't like, people like to say, oh, there's no evidence. I'm like, well, there's actually lots of footage from various countries' militaries catching these things on radar, and you you can listen to the tapes of them chasing these things, and then they vanish from radar, and so radar could be considered physical evidence. The fact that multiple militaries have gone after these to like try and chase these things down, which is what this new stuff that's coming out is pointing out, and it's like, but we've known this forever. In fact, a lot of the tapes that have come out are from like the early 2000s, and you know, I mean, there was a, I grew up in northeastern Ohio, and there was an incident in northeastern Ohio, in Warren, Ohio, I believe, where, yeah, I mean, it's like, you can listen to the people calling in this UFO sightings, like, you can hear them calling it in, you know, and it's multiple people saying, hey, calling the cops, like, we have these tapes, and then you have the testimony for the cops that are like, yeah, we went to investigate this thing, and we saw it too, and then you have the cop, the transcripts of the cops radioing back and forth to each other, like, saying, oh, yeah, there it is, okay, I'm going to chase it over here, and then later the cop is like, and then the thing hovered above my car and shut my entire car down, and so people, the mainstream media has done an effective job of putting in every people and putting this idea in most people's mind, just like they have the existence of psi phenomenon, that, you know, there's nothing there, really. There's just nothing there. And weirdly enough, but it doesn't take an expert to do like a layman's, you know, due diligence looking into this stuff to see like, wait, what the fuck? What? You know, I mean, when you listen to the again, like, these are police transcripts, these are citizens calling this stuff in, then you can listen to the transcripts of the cops chasing it around, interview them, multiple stories saying, oh yeah, this totally fucking happened, you know, and it's not like there's no evidence, this there is, and the same thing with pilots and military officials, I mean, and yet what annoys me with UFO people is, like I said, there are a lot of fraudsters, but the main point is the people that just understand that like, the people that think that they know what's going on. Cause like, you know, no, you don't. All we really know about UFOs is something fucking weird is going on. And I think it's more important than ever to like look at that and say, okay, you're right. We don't know what this is. We can't tell you what the hell this actually is, but we can absolutely say that something fucking weird is there. And I would say the same thing about the human imagination. When you look in research that's gone into savantism, meditation, lucid dreaming, which is science fact that's been proven, psychedelics, hypnosis, like all of these things, when you talk about magic as being, you know, crazy, anytime you tell somebody I'm a sorcerer or I'm a magician or a wizard, you know, they're just going to like laugh at you and like, oh, that's ridiculous. And like, this is science fact at this point. Like, we know that this potentiality of the human imagination is there. Now, what we don't know is what it means, you know, and like, and that's what we got to stop claiming. Like, the evidence is there in both UFOs and the UFO contact phenomenon that something fucking weird is going on that we don't understand. But beyond that is what you can't really get in. There is a level of agnosticism there that it is very subjective. I would state that there's a spiritual world that's influencing, and this is what I've been shown, is that there is a spiritual realm hidden behind the veil of our waking reality that is influencing our reality in ways that we don't understand, and at a much complex level, and that the human reality, like, again, the story that we're a part of is a much deeper, rich story than we realize, and the story exists on levels that we don't understand. But yeah, I mean, UFOs are one of those things where it's like, all you have to do is a cursory look into these things to realize something supremely, like, these things aren't just being caught on Air Force radar, a bunch of sane pilots, and that's like the crazy amount of pilots that have reported this at this point, and like, these are all not crazy people at all, and like, they have witnesses, so something fucking strange is going on. Yeah, I am absolutely thrilled that it's, that we haven't just, we're not getting swept in, we're not sweeping it under the rug.
With Leslie Keen? She wrote a book called UFOs, Generals, Pilots, and Government Officials Go on the Record. That's probably the driest book I've ever read on UFOs, but it's also like one of the most credible, because she just goes to all these like really credible people. Yeah,
no, and absolutely. And this is what people don't get, is your position that there's nothing on UFOs is really just genuinely ignorant at this point. Like, you have not looked at this. Like, this is really strange, and you're absolutely right. Like, I mean, we don't know what it is, but there is something there that we don't understand. And what's funny is you're right, it went away for a while, and now it's coming back, and we're talking about the exact same thing. And you're right, I'm familiar with Leslie Keen. I've never read one of her books, but I've heard her speak, and I've heard her on various shows, so I'm totally familiar with what she does. And yeah, she makes an incredibly valid point. I mean, she talks about how these things have showed up around nuclear facilities, and this has been reported. Again, there's like reports on this kind of stuff, you know? It's not like there's no evidence. It's like, yeah, but here's this government report talking about this incident that happened, you know? And so it's not like there's nothing there. There's something weird going on. Absolutely. So I think it just pushes us to ask, what is that weird thing that's going on? And I think that pushes us more in towards a direction of, well, you know, the question with UFOs isn't what are we? The question is what are they? It's what are we? I completely fucked that up. You know, and the more we ask what are we, I think the more we'll be able to understand what is going on with the UFO phenomenon. And it's inherently that was the one point I wanted to make before we wrap this up, is I do find it fascinating that because technology has advanced so much, and now because of the To the Stars Academy, like, all this information is coming out, you know, and people now have a much broader scope to say, or frame of reference to say, well, it's clearly just like, you know, some other country's technology that we don't understand, you know, because the idea that we could have this technology makes sense now. And that's what they don't understand is ridiculous. I see a lot of people posting these articles and you see people immediately being like, oh, it's just got to be somebody else's tech that we just don't know. And it's like, but now you're getting to the territory where you're saying this tech that we don't understand has existed throughout human history. And sorry, like, you're trying to, like, come up with this rational explanation, you know, and technology has enabled that for people to say, oh, this is just tech we don't understand. Clearly the government has developed tech we don't understand. It's like, but then the question is there, so they developed tech we didn't understand back in 1945? Like, that's a weirder explanation than, like, some kind of entity we don't understand. Like, the idea that...
Jacques Vallée wrote a whole book. I'm blanking on the name. It was about ancient UFO sightings.
Yeah, I think Passports of Mangonia, I believe. Yeah, I want to read that one. I've never really read a lot of Jacques Vallée, and I read a ton of UFO books in the back of the day, but that's exactly it. It's like, this stuff has existed throughout history. This idea that it's just tech we don't understand is actually a weirder explanation than aliens. Because what you're saying is that somehow there were humans that were more technologically advanced than we are now 2,000 years ago. Sell me that narrative. Try to explain that to me without, you know, or even if you're only going to go back to 1945. Okay, so sell me a narrative that makes sense where there was this government program that had technology more advanced than we have now back in 1947 or whatever. Like, I can't get there. Like, if I'm even going to try and make that up, say I'm going to write a book about that, you're right. You're getting into weird time travel or weird, you know, superhuman entities. Like, either way, it's getting into some, either way, you're getting into the territory. So you can't accept aliens, but you can accept this other thing that's weirder than aliens. I mean,
you got to think too about, like, Aleister Crowley and his depiction of Lamb, one of the entities he channeled, looks exactly like a gray alien.
I call sort of bullshit on that one myself, I think that Crowley was a fraud, and I think the Lamb thing that he channeled doesn't actually have the defining characteristics of the aliens, which is a huge eyes. He doesn't have the eyes, so it has this oblong head, and I just throw it in the realm that Crowley was such an obvious charlatan. Like, I mean, that guy was an alcoholic junkie, and he was a total pile of shit human being. So, like, I think people put a little too much into that, and I can say this straight up. Why I think it's ridiculous to talk about Crowley, and I'm not saying maybe he did. Like, I do, the guy did magic. Maybe he contacted something that was similar. But the point is that shamanic cultures have been talking about this forever. I think it's definitely, that's a fun narrative that Jack Parsons summoned the UFOs and Aleister Crowley. But, you know, I can say this as somebody who runs a website that posts, that interviews a lot of magicians, that I've talked to a lot of people that are into the occult. There doesn't seem to be much of a connection between ritual magic and the occult. There really doesn't. Like, I don't see a lot of people talking about that. Now, psychedelic drugs and alien encounters? Oh, yeah. Like, there's a connection there. Absolutely 100%. I have had tons of people tell me weird stories about, like, alien-type encounters. Then these people aren't doing occult rituals. This involves ritual magic. So, again, lots of people that do ritual magic, I don't see much of this tie-in between UFO stuff. People that are doing psychedelic drugs, a.k.a. shamanism, yes, there's a tie in there. And when you look into it, this connection to the star people, as I referred to a lot of shamanic cultures, goes back forever. And so, yeah, I mean, the idea that, like, Crowley, but again, I must say, when Crowley talks about this entity that he summoned, this lamb, he was apparently doing mescaline, again, furthering my point that he wasn't just doing ritual magic. He was doing ritual magic on fairly strong hallucinogenic drugs. So that furthers my point. But yeah, a lot of people left it. And this is embedded into Twin Peaks, this idea that him and Jack Parsons, but I'm like, but this shit existed before either one of them. And not only that, you can watch people doing the exact same kind of magic those dudes were doing on YouTube right now. So there's this weird idea that, like, oh, you know what the thing that makes magic work is? It's fame. if you're famous, that's what really makes magic work, you know? And I'm like, I don't buy that. Like, you can watch people doing these exact same kind of rituals. UFOs predate Parsons and Crowley. They predate, like, not only that, like, these guys weren't doing anything original. Like, they were doing the exact same sort of magic that a gajillion other people have done throughout history. So the idea that since they were famous, like, their magic worked, and the exact magic that, and I actually joke about that too. I always say that I summoned, because I was talking about that acid ritual I did, that where I started getting pulled from my body in 2012. So I love to joke that the acid ritual I did in 2012 is what led to the UFOs over Mount Rainier in the 40s that led to the term flying saucer. And what I know about time, like, that might be true. So, you know, that might be a good place to end it. So if you're listening to this podcast, like, I summoned those UFOs. They came from me, man. Acid rituals I did in 2012 caused the flying saucers over Mount Rainier. I live in Seattle, by the way. And that's where I opened a portal that retroactively reached back into time and summoned the UFOs. So it was me.
Well, Jake Dale was not kidding when you said that it can get really trippy with your radio appearances.
Oh yeah, no. Oh, I didn't even, like, we talked about, like, politics and stuff, man. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Oh, definitely. And this would be a time to plug my books. I have two great books if you want to hear weird stories. Yeah, I mean, and that's the funny thing is, like, my stuff that I do about politics gets way more hits. But man, I could talk about channeling aliens and I have weird experiences near daily. Not as much. I went through a period where for several years, like, it was just, like, constant. And I'm actually coming out with a book, hopefully next year, that's finally tying up some of that stuff. But I had a period where I was just constant stuff. But yeah, no, my, you know, like, I'm a mystic, a wizard, a sorcerer, like, whatever the fuck you want to call it, like, I'm it. And all I can do is just say, you know, you might not believe in aliens, but there's people like me, and there's people that have these experiences, and you might not believe in aliens, but, you know, hey, do you believe in other people? You know, it's harder to dismiss that people like me exist and have always existed. And yeah, no, absolutely. I could have gone a lot weirder. So anyways, check out the best book, if you want to read more about this stuff, for me, is Transmissions from Outside of Time, which is out there right now. And I have another book, Galactic Dialogue, Occult Initiations. I definitely recommend Transmissions from Outside of Time. If you like that, read the other one. I'm also a musician. I've been doing probably the first spiritual practice that I did was making ritualistic psychedelic music to induce other dimensional entities. And you can check out a bunch of that at DMI Occult at Bandcamp, or dmioccult.bandcamp.com. Again, dmioccult.bandcamp.com. And you can find most, if you search, like, Black Science on YouTube, a lot of stuff will come up too. So anyways.
Well, thank you for appearing on the Parallax Views podcast.
Thanks for having me on, man. It's been fun chatting. And thanks so much for contributing stuff to Disinfo. You're helping keep it alive. And it seems like lately I'm actually getting more contributors. So it's not just like a bunch of me. Then that's the idea, is that hopefully we can keep this the longest countercultural website that's in existence going. And so thank you for contributing and having me on, man.
Well, that does it for this edition of Parallax Views. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Thad McCracken. To close out the show this week, I've got another track from Thad's band Black Science entitled Hardcore UFOs.
calling. You say when.